The United Nations has described Darfur, Sudan, as the most urgent humanitarian crisis in the world. For more than a year, Arab militia groups, called Janjaweed, have waged a campaign against the region's black farming communities. Militia raids have killed at least 30,000 and frightened more than a million people from their homes, and now famine is looming. The United Nations and the Sudanese government have agreed on a plan to disarm militia groups by August 30th, but that plan has yet to be approved by Sudan's cabinet. Sudanese leaders are widely believed to support the militia raids in Darfur. Samantha Power has just returned from Darfur and other parts of Sudan and neighboring Chad. She wrote the award-winning book, A Problem from Hell, America in the Age of Genocide, and joins us from the studios at Harvard University. Thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure.
We have to ask you what you saw on this last trip.
Well, it was a kind of tour of hell, I would say. I began in Chad in the camps and heard horrifying tales of decapitation, of children being thrown into fires alive, of rape. There were women who'd actually been branded by the Janjaweed, so they would be marked as having been raped. And then I moved into Sudan, crossed the border into North Darfur, and there I encountered internally displaced people who were too poor or too infirm to make the trek to Chad. They were desperate to get out of Sudan. I encountered bodies lying face down in a ravine, 14 bodies with 17 bullet casings around them. They were men who had been shot in the back of the head or in the back. I encountered wells that witnesses said had been stuffed with bodies but had subsequently been covered over with sand. So all you could see was the kind of rim of the well, and then it was as if they had tried to cover their tracks. It was grim.
Sudan's UN ambassador says that his government is in fact trying to stop the armed militia. But at least, I guess, in Friday's New York Times, there's an Arab tribal leader believed to be a Janjaweed leader who says, in fact, he's acting on behalf of the Sudanese government. Do you have, coming back, any greater understanding of whether or not these two entities are working together?
I actually spent a day with Musa Hilal, who is the head of the Janjaweed, and his aim in escorting me around Darfur was to show that Africans and Arabs were living together, that he was a man of peace and reconciliation. But in fact, all he ended up really showing was how he works hand in glove with the government. We were flown around on a government-chartered plane. Musa Hilal, the head of the Janjaweed, was carrying Thuraya satellite phones from Khartoum that were supplied to him by Sudanese army officials as we left the airport, and he carried them to his men out in the field. Neither government officials nor Musa Hilal himself deny the connection. I mean, they have worked together to bring about these horrifying results.
People are taking a look at this August 30th deadline, and Great Britain and Australia have proposed sending troops to Darfur. Does it strike you that would be a contribution at this point?
Oh, I think it would be an enormous contribution. The displaced people who are inhabiting the camps, both in Darfur itself and then in neighboring Chad, are very adamant about one thing. They will not go back to their homes unless there is an international peacekeeping presence. They would have to be receiving humanitarian aid, but the peacekeepers would facilitate the delivery of that aid. Sudan, however, has been adamant that the only international presence they will accept is that of the African Union. So I think, realistically speaking, in the coming weeks, we're probably more likely to see the consensual deployment of African Union peacekeepers from Rwanda and Nigeria.
As you laid out in your book, A Problem from Hell, the hesitations that the world, including the United States, went through in confronting massacres in Bosnia, massacres in Rwanda that resulted in what are now universally condemned as great tragedies. Is there an opportunity to learn from those and other situations here and correct those mistakes and do something different in Darfur?
It sounds strange to say this, but the advantage of Darfur is that it has happened quickly enough to where it has created news value, where people are suddenly dying, and you need that to generate outside interest. But it is also happening slow enough to where we actually have time to turn the kind of slow, grinding, rusty wheels of the international machinery in a direction to bring about a military and humanitarian deployment that saves lives. Somewhere close to a million people could die by the end of the year if we don't move that machinery in a hurry.
Samantha Power speaking from Harvard University, where she teaches public policy. Thanks very much.
Thank you.